जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुन तीरवनचारी यमुन तीरवनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना जशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना यमुन तीरवनचारी यमुन तीरवनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र सत श्री श्रीमद His Divine Grace, Lesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupad ki jai, Granantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Nitai Go Premanande Hari Ribo Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gaurango. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, Renunciation of Kardama Muni. Text, let's see, 7 and 8. Yes, 7 and 8. So let's see, we can all do together and then we'll do responsively the next one. So just do 7 together. Avadyang stadavyon ni vaditrani guna gana gayanti tam smagandharva nityantyap saraso mura. At the time of his descent on earth, this is Lord Kapila, demigods in the form of raining clouds sounded musical instruments in the sky. The celestial musicians, the Gandharvas, sang the glories of the Lord, while celestial dancing girls, known as Apsaras, danced in joyful ecstasy. Text 8, word meanings, Petu, fell, Sumanasa, flowers, Divya, beautiful, Ke Charai, by the demigods who fly in the sky. Apavarjitaha, dropped. Prasedu, became satisfied. Cha and Disha, directions. Sarva, all. Ampangsi, waters. Cha and Manangsi, minds. Cha and. Petu sumanaso divya. Hecharairapavarjita Pratseduscha disha sarva Ambhangsi cha mamangsi cha Petu sumanaso divya Kicharairapavarjita Prasedushcha disha sarva Ambhangsi cha manangsi cha. Petu sumanaso divya Hecharairapavarjita Prasedushcha disha sarva Ambhangsi cha mamangsi cha. Petu sumanaso divya Hecharairapavarjita Prasedushcha disha sarva Ambhangsi cha manangsi cha. Hecharairapavarjita Prasedushcha disha sarva Ambhangsi cha manangsi cha. Translation. At the time of the Lord's appearance, the demigods flying freely in the sky showered flowers. All the directions, all the waters, and everyone's mind became very satisfied. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is learned herewith that in the higher sky, there are living entities who can travel through the air without being hampered. Although we can travel in outer space, we are hampered by so many impediments, but they are not. We learn from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam that the inhabitants of the planet called Siddhaloka can travel in space from one planet to another without impediment. They showered flowers on the earth when Lord Kapila, the son of Kardama, appeared. Om Jnana Timinantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I was going to look at some of these words to start here. After a while, we should learn a few words, what they mean. And they remind us of different things. In the first verse, we have Vyomni. So you may know in Krishna Lila, Vyoma Asura. What did Vyoma Asura do? He was flying through the sky. So Vyoma is the sky. So Vyomni, Vaditrani. Mahaprabho Kirtana Nritya Gita Vaditra Majan Manasora Sena. So one of the things the spiritual master does that gives him ecstasy is playing musical instruments in kirtan. Vaditra. So Vaditrani, musical instruments. Gana Gana, which is also in Guru Vashtika. That's the word for clouds, gana gana. It's onomatopoeia, I would think. It's like the rumbling of clouds, the very name itself, gana gana. So gana gana tum, the spiritual master is like a cloud because he rains mercy, gets the mercy from Krishna and rains it down upon us. So here we have literal rain clouds, apparently literal. Gayanti sang. So Gaya Gora Madhur Swade, that's Bengali, of course, but the same word, or Gayatri. So singing is Gaya. Let's see what else. Of course, then we have Gandharvas dancing, Nritya, Nritya Goranga. And we have a devotee here named Nritya Goranga, dancing Goranga, Nrityanti. Then Apsara, the Apsaras, Muda. This is a nice example of how you mispronounce something. There's Muda and there's Mudha. They're not the same thing. Muda means happiness. It's said in the prayers to the six Goswamis that they're pouring the nectar on the fallen souls, making them happy by that, by the nectar of Krishna Katha. They become, here it says, joyful ecstasy. So they're in ecstasy. Lord Kapiladeva is appearing, and they're privy to it. They're seeing it happen. They understand what's going on. The Lord is appearing on earth. They're happy. Apparently for the residents of earth, they're not descending onto their planet, but they're going to witness his activities. So they're very happy. So they are, as I say, at the time of his descent on earth, demigods in the form of raining clouds. So they're disguised as clouds, apparently. I always wonder about this idea of a cloud, because what is a cloud? Clouds don't, they're so insubstantial. Where does one start and another one end? You know, where does one end and another one start? Like, unless you have these very well-shaped cumulus clouds, usually they all kind of merge together. Even fog is a cloud. So what is one cloud? It's hard to say. Another thing, little curious, I think it's in the Aghasura pastime. They were so afraid of Aghasura, the demigods, that they were hiding behind clouds. That seemed like a very, very safe place to hide. Next thing you know, poof, there goes the cloud. There goes your hiding spot. And they had the very idea that the demigods would have to hide behind clouds. I was just saying here, you know, literal rain clouds, and then there's metaphorical rain clouds. So a lot of these things you wonder, is this really going on like this? Or is this just trying to paint some picture? They were afraid, but so they were hiding somehow. So you wouldn't think they would need clouds to hide. They have such power, they can make themselves invisible. Anyway, we come across things like that. So that demigods in the form of raining clouds, sounded musical instruments in the sky. So these clouds are playing musical instruments in the sky. So many things we believe, right? Somehow we believe on, at least on one, I think, imagine, you know, some, well, ordinary person, they say, what, this is just, how can you believe this? This is so, how naive are you to believe such things like this? I was saying one counter is, well, how naive are you? You think that life comes from chemicals bouncing together. What's more naive than that? There's so many naive things that they're the foundations of their existence. So we accept them in the context, the greater context of all the things that go on. In the, you know, things we learn about Krishna. I'm always thinking of this idea, you know, in Jiva Goswami's Tattvasandarbha, you know how he begins, he dismisses other kinds of evidence. He wants to establish the pramana. How do you understand something? Epistemology, how do you go about investigating what is the truth? Basically, that's the idea, what is the truth? So he dismisses, of course, production. So many, you know, are trying to learn the truth just by our senses. So then he makes what, for most Westerners at least, is a great leap, and then he goes, so you have to believe the Vedas. That's your evidence. So people say, well, wait a minute, how'd you get to there? How'd you get to there so quick? So, of course, he's speaking in a particular context. But one way, to understand this is anyone, if you actually study the Vedas, especially under someone who understands what the Siddhanta is, and you see how much is there, where is more information about, you know, focused information about what is reality, and so much information. It's so broad and vast and deep. It's hard to read it and think, boy, is somebody making all this up? How could anybody possibly make this up, all of these things? It's so, and you have so many testimonials from those who, for example, who experienced what the reality is. They're seeing it. As Prabhupada would say, you can see Krishna face to face if you follow this process. So there are so many things. I forget what I was listening to, something in the Bhagavatam. And, you know, the idea that, just like in, even in India today, we have all these, you know, Kumbh Mela, the hundreds of millions of people attend, but you have all these yogis coming out. So a lot of things that the yogis experience, they're directly experiencing something. They can do these amazing things, actually, which, according to modern science, are impossible, so many things. But they have direct experience, and no, these things are real. If you focus your attention enough, you can get experience of these things. So many things in our books, they may appear, this is just, you know, naive, as I was saying, or this is just mythology. But there are so many things that are revealed you can actually experience, and that, of course, gives you faith. And, of course, another this is another aspect, I think, of how, you know, how we gain faith. For me, a very strong component of my faith is our saints, the saints of our tradition. They can't, the way they lived their lives, they were obviously experiencing something, something I'm not experiencing. They were actually experiencing something, the way that they lived, like the six Goswamis. You know, how can you live like that, the way they lived, unless they were living on another platform, on another plane of existence that I have no access to yet, but hope to someday. So that is also, you know, we get faith by their experience, what they were able to, you know, how they were able to live their lives, extraordinary personalities. So anyway, so we're hearing about these. These are, like Prabhupada would sometimes refer to them as semi-demigods, like the Apsaras and the Gandharvas here, and there's so many. There's the, here Prabhupada calls it the, what did he say here? Sky, how did he translate it? The higher sky. Yeah, he said the higher sky. So, in other words, beyond the sky, maybe where the planes fly. Actually, there's a definition somewhere, these different levels. And one of them is really high. It's quite, I forget, you know, how many miles or whatever high it is. But it's just said that as high as the eagles and swans fly. I never knew swans flew that high, many miles high in the sky. That example is given there. So in the higher sky, between basically Bhuloka and Swargaloka, the heavenly planets, where Indra is, then you have Bhuvarloka, where these personalities live. But they also, we hear about them in the context of Swargaloka also. Their planets apparently are in the middle region. The Vidyadharas, they're another group. There's so many of them, so many of these different groups. In fact, sometimes when the Lord arrives someplace, he's accompanied with a lot of these different entities from different parts of the universe. And it's always striking to me that sometimes this includes the Yakshas and Rakshasas accompanying Lord Vishnu somewhere, which is shocking. But Lord Indra, he's always being entertained by them, especially these musicians. So they're entertaining or they're glorifying Lord Kapila because he's playing. But Lord Indra, he sits on his elevated seat there in Swargaloka. And we have this one scene where Indra is enjoying with all these personalities there. He's the man. He's sitting in the highest seat, and they're performing for him. It's a command performance. Indra can bring anybody he wants to perform for him. And of course, they're the greatest singers in the universe and the greatest musicians in the universe and so on. So he's enjoying like that. Everyone is around. It's a big party. So then Brihaspati arrives and he ignores him because he's having so much fun and he's puffed up because all of these people have come here. I'm the center of attention. This is all being performed for me. And of course, what happens, he realizes later, his Brihaspati just leaves. And Indra realizes, I offended my guru. I made a big mistake. But says Indra, it's not elaborated on as far as I know, but it said Brihaspati left on purpose. He didn't want to give Indra the opportunity to apologize. That seems to be the idea. That was how he was chastising him, you can say. Yeah, you've offended me, and I'm not going to let you, I'm not going to give you any forgiveness right away. You're going to have to earn it somehow. So of course he goes, he suffers greatly. Indra suffers from this. So anyway, Indra is often accompanied by these different personalities. So I was thinking about these things. I was thinking there was a devotee, fairly well-known devotee, kind of an intellectual type, who left Krishna consciousness some years ago. And after he was gone, I don't know how long, but he wrote a paper explaining somewhat about why he left Krishna consciousness. So the one thing that sticks in my mind, he says, I just can't believe that there's some person that throws, sends the rain and throws thunderbolts, like Indra. So I just can't believe that. That's just, mythology. And so I was thinking, the problem is, these kinds of things, if you start, nibbling away at the edges, next thing you know, you lose the whole thing, right? Because if you get rid of Indra, then what about Govardhan Leela, right? Because Krishna interacts with these personalities. So once you start, Indra, all right, I can discount the demigods maybe, but wait a minute. Then you're getting, gets a little dangerous because Krishna interacts with these persons. So everything is connected. So if you start picking away and pulling things out of the picture that you don't believe, then that can lead to big problems. So we just accept it. We may not understand how it works. A lot of times, I don't understand. But these things are there. They're presented to us as factual. And Prabhupada was very cautious about presenting anything as metaphor. He really generally would just take it as it is, basically. And in fact, that's the, according to the Vedic language, when you study, I was talking about epistemology, so understanding the Vedas, To look at something, when you first look at something, if you're trying to understand it like a Vedic verse, you're supposed to first take things on the face value. What comes to mind when you read that word? So if you read the word Krishna, what comes to mind? Well, the person, Krishna. So you don't immediately think, maybe this means black, it's whatever. This kind. So this is about some dark thing, So, yeah, of course, we know in relationship to chanting the holy name, this is an offense to think like that. I remember many years ago, Achyutananda Prabhu, an article that appeared in BTG, he gave an example. He said, in the future, people may read about this person named Kennedy. Right? So Kennedy means what you can perceive, the area of your perception. Ken, what is within your ken, what is within your perception. So an eddy means it's like a stream going against the flow. So it kind of causes some chaos or turbulence. So he says maybe people will think, oh, this is about somebody who had a lot of turbulence in their mind. You know, that's what Kennedy is about. So people do that with the Vedas, of course, we know. As Prabhupada said, the impersonalists, they pick apart the words and they come up with ideas. They try to support their point of view. And Bhagavad Gita scholars, of course, they also do the same thing. As Prabhupada would say, they're great scholars of Bhagavad Gita, but they kick out Krishna. So this is dangerous. So we just accept it and we see what's going on here. So the main thing here, well, there's a couple of things. There's singing and dancing in the sky, dancing on the cloud. They are clouds, some of them, appearing as clouds. And then it said they showered flowers. So somewhere I came across the idea that, well, I think the phrase is sometimes used. Here it says, of course, they appeared in the form of clouds. But somewhere I've read the idea that they showered flowers in the form of rain. So maybe, it depending on your perception, it may look like rain, but if you're Lord Kapila, it looks like flowers. If you're a demigod or some other entity. Why? It's not a big trick for them. They have so many amazing powers. A magician can make something look completely opposite what it is. So they could shower flowers, and to me it may look like rain, but to someone who's more qualified, oh, look, flowers are coming down. You know? So we have a lot of examples in the Bhagavatam of this idea of showering flowers. I was just looking through the Veda base of different examples of this. First one I came across was the passing of Bhishmadev. So it's not only when the Lord appears, but so many glorious events, because they're being witnessed by these entities, which is another amazing thing. These personalities, they get to witness so many things that are taking place on earth, even the Rasa dance. And one of the commentators on the Rasa Leela says, at least the male demigods, they weren't seeing the gopis, they were only seeing Krishna. Because it's so confidential, because I've always wondered, how is it they're able to see the Rasa dance? What is their qualification? But that's the way it's stated. And anyway, sometimes the commentators have certain insights to these things from their own experience. But still, generally, they witness many of Krishna's pastimes. So I'll mention a few more of these. When Naranarayan appeared, that was a glorious event, another incarnation of the Lord. At Bhadravik Ashram. He's still there at Bhadravik Ashram. Narada Muni goes there a lot. It's one of his favorite places to go. He hears from him. The whole the chapter, the prayers by the personified Vedas, is Naranarayan speaking to Narada Muni. Naranarayan Rishi speaking to Narada Muni. Actually, in the beginning, the way he tells the story, Naranarayan, this is all in the context of Parikshit asks Shukadeva, how can the Vedas talk about the absolute truth when they just deal with mundane things? So to answer that question, we have a few steps before we get up to the personified Vedas offering their prayers. So Narada, he asks the question to Naranarayan, and Naranarayan says, oh, there are these sages on Janaloka, they were discussing this. You were somewhere else. I forget what he says. He says, you were at, I forget, some holy place or something. He knew where he was. Naranarayan, of course, he always knows everything. But Narada, you didn't happen to be there. But the four Kumaras and other great sages on Janaloka, they were discussing this. And they chose one of them to be this main speaker. And that was Sunandana. And he's the one who actually quotes what the personified Vedas said. Some 30-some verses, that prayers by the personified Vedas. So anyway, when Naranarayan appeared, there were showers of flowers. When Dhruva Maharaj was boarding the plane to go back to Godhead, When Prabhupada would arrive at airports, sometimes there would be showers of flowers. Some probably coming from the demigods, right? How do we know? The appearance of Prithu Maharaj, of course, he made his appearance in an unusual way from the churning of his father, Vena. His wife was from one limb and he was from the other limb, right? Isn't that how it goes? I think so. So then the demigods showered flowers. When Lord Nrsimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu, actually, I guess they showered flowers and then they came on the scene because we know there were so many demigods there and they were trying to appease Lord Nrsimhadev, but they couldn't get him to calm down. He was so angry. Personification of anger. Only Prahlad could calm him down. This is then later in the seventh canto. It's interesting context, actually. After Prahlad and Nrsimha are speaking, of course, Nrsimhadeva is offering Prahlad benedictions, and Prahlad says, I'm just your servant. Don't make me into a merchant. Don't make this a mercantile exchange, exchange of goods. You give me something, I give you something. No, I'm just your servant. You're the master. That's it. Don't tempt me with these things. So, of course, Nrsimhadeva is an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, and who is, of course, Krishna. So after this, then there's a story of Lord Shiva, which you may think, why is this story of Lord Shiva there? It's about Lord Shiva and the Tripurasura, you know, the three cities of the demigods. They were defeating the demigods big time. And Lord Shiva tried to destroy them. He was killing all these demons, but then I guess it was Maya Danava created this pool of nectar. So whenever some demon was killed, you just dip them in the pool, in the swimming pool, the nectar pool, bring them back to life. So Shiva kept, he was being defeated. So what happened, Lord Vishnu came to rescue him. He empowered him, and then Lord Shiva was able to destroy. And he's the one that got the name Tripurari. He's the one that destroyed these three cities. But it was by the mercy of Lord Vishnu, actually. He was empowered. So the context seems to be to show that Lord Nrsimhadev is so powerful. He's Krishna, and Krishna is greater even than, or Lord Vishnu is greater even than Lord Shiva. And here's an example of that. So anyway, when Nrsimhadev was killed, then there was a shower of flowers, and then when Lord Shiva destroyed Tripurasura, when Lord Vishnu arrived to deliver Gajendra, Gajendra Mokshana, Leela, they showered flowers there. Here's a quote. Let's see why I put this here. This was during the churning of the milk ocean. So this is actually the verse, or part of the verse. Manifesting, you know, in this pastime, Lord Vishnu appears in several different ways in the churning of the milk ocean. So here's one. Manifesting himself with thousands of hands, the Lord then appeared on the summit of Mandara Mountain, like another great mountain, and held Mandara Mountain with one hand. You wonder how he's standing on the mountain and holding it up at the same time. But it's like it's always discussed, how did Krishna lift Govardhan Hill? If you try to think of it, it's a huge hill, so you can't, he has to get into the middle of it, find the center of the gravity, right? You start thinking this mechanistic kind of way. You think, well, that's impossible. How could he do that, you know? But he's Krishna, so he can do it. So here, this also, that when Lord Vishnu did this, there was a shower of flowers. In that same Leela, when Rama means the goddess of fortune, she appeared from the churning of the ocean of milk. Actually, I think there are three. This is pointed out by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on this Leela, the churning the milk ocean, that Lakshmi Devi appears in different forms in that Leela, as the original Lakshmi, Rama Devi, but also in other forms. But there's a material Lakshmi also. It gives Lakshmi to the materialists, gives money to the materialists and wealth and fortune and so on, to materialistic benedictions. She provides those. Of course, she also gives bhakti, devotion to the Lord. So when Rama garlanded the Lord, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the great sage Angira, similar directors of universal management showered flowers. So here we have, this is, I thought this was interesting, I just came across this, that even Lord, it's not just these lower personalities, the Gandharvas and so on, showering flowers, or even Indra and his associates from the heavenly planets, but even all the way up to Lord Brahma. When, of course, when Lord Vishnu is involved, then why not? He's the Lord Brahma's a servant, and Lord Shiva as well. He also gets involved in the fun, showering down flowers. And even sages, the great sage Angira. So he, I don't know where he lives exactly. We hear about him on earth, but some of these sages, just like the Kumaras, they're sometimes here, sometimes there, sometimes Janaloka, Tapaloka. They go wherever they want, basically. These great sages, they have these great, amazing powers. So they join in the fun too and sometimes shower flowers down. Now here, I think I quoted this because this is just a list of some of these different personalities that we hear about, which we don't get a lot of descriptions. We hear maybe something about their powers, but not so much. So here, this is also about showering flowers, actually. The Siddhas. So Prabhupada would mention the Siddhas a lot, and just like he did here, they can go from planet to planet, they don't need airplanes. Whenever he would talk about, you know, the higher personalities can fly in the sky without airplanes, you know, he would often make that point. He would generally refer to the Siddhas, and there's a planet called Siddhaloka. So the Siddhas, the Vidyadharas, we hear about them a lot. I was thinking, I don't know what it means. Vidya means knowledge, and adhara means to hold. So they must be very intelligent, apparently. And one thing in the story of King Chitraketu, when he gets over all his lamentation for his dying son and so on, and he offers prayers to the Lord given to him by Narada Muni and becomes very elevated, becomes essentially, you might say, half liberated. As it says, as a preliminary reward for his spiritual advancement, he was able to travel around with the Vidyadharas and view all the sights of the universe. So apparently that's one thing they do. They enjoy a lot all over. The Kimpurushas and Kinnaras, this kin part means who or what. It's because they, Kimpurusha, Kinnara. Purusha means man or person, and Nara means man or person. So, I mean, when you see them, you say, they look kind of like humans, but they're not exactly. So you look at them and you say, are they human? Kim Purusha? Is this a human? That's where their names come from, basically. Kim Purusha? Kim Nara? And then the Charanas. Charana, I don't know what Charan. Charan means feet, so I don't know. Charanas, I'm not sure what they do exactly. The Yakshas. So these are all people that are showering flowers here in this. Well, I didn't tell you what they're showering flowers on. I'll get to that. So Yakshas, of course, they're the associates of Kubera. And they seem to be a mix because sometimes they're presented as pious personalities. And sometimes not. Of course, they were fighting with Dhruva Maharaj. So sometimes, I think it's in the glossary in the Veda base where it says that they're, somewhere I came across this. They're sometimes presented as pious and sometimes they're presented as impious. So Yaksharaj is Kubera. Those are his associates, the Yakshas. Rakshasas, so we know about Rakshasas on the earth, like Hidimba, for example. And Bhima married him, Hidimba, the Rakshasi. What are they? They're, well, single word translation is cannibals. They eat humans. So Putana was in that category, apparently. And then Suparnas, that means snakes, right? Suparnas. There's also Udugas, they're sometimes mentioned. Uduga means to go on your belly, Uduga, snake. Many of the words in Sanskrit are descriptive like that. They just describe what the entity does. Oh, it says, Suparnas, the best of serpents, so all of these persons, and the followers of the demigods, which I think all of these are in some sense, all showered flowers on Aditi's residence, covering the entire house, which, while glorifying and praising the Lord and dancing. So what's the context of this? Lord Vamanadeva's appearance. Aditi, where she was exactly. This is the question that came to mind for me. A lot of times it's hard to understand, where is this taking place exactly? Now, it seems that like this is taking place on Earth. There's a couple of hints of that. One is that Lord Vamanadeva, one thing is Aditi wasn't where she normally is, and that's why she's praying to Lord Vishnu, because the demigods had got kicked out of the heavenly planets by Bali Maharaj. They ran away in fear, actually, because Bali Maharaj was so powerful. He had pleased the Brahmins of the Bhrigu line. Shukracharya actually comes in that line, but somehow he ends up associating with the Asuras. So they pleased Bali Maharaj and these other Asuras. Bali Maharaj, of course, is in the Asura dynasty. So they pleased the Brahmins. They performed sacrifices, and Bali Maharaj became very powerful. He had a celestial chariot. Even Prahlad Maharaj appeared on the scene and gave him a garland, sort of like sending him off to battle. So the demigods, they lost their place, and Aditi is the mother of the demigods. So she was very upset about this, of course. She wanted the demigods, her sons, to get their place back. So she performed this Payavrata ceremony. Her husband, Kasyapa, told her what to do. And because of that, the Lord responded, and he appeared. Lord Vishnu appeared and told her that he would appear as her son. Actually, what he said was, said they can't be defeated by force because they're being blessed by the Brahmanas now. They're too powerful. They can't be defeated. There's actually a verse where in the scheduled incarnations with specific functions, that chapter, seventh chapter of the second canto, when Lord Vamana, it has the incarnation, so when Vamana is mentioned, it says here that he retrieved the heavenly planets from the demons by begging. Because, now the way Prabhupada states it, he states in kind of a general way that one cannot take something without begging or something. I forget how he phrases it. But the idea is that the only way Vamana could do it, suppose, you know, in quotes, was by begging. Because he himself said the demons are too powerful, we can't defeat them. But the demigods won't be able to defeat the demons in battle. So we have to do some other tactic. So that's the idea of that verse. One has to beg. I mean, means in that incident, in that particular episode, the begging was necessary to get it back. So anyway, so they showered flowers on Aditi's residence, covering the entire house. So that's, sometimes Prabhupada was covered with garlands right there that start pulling him off. His head is kind of peeking out above the garlands. So many garlands are being offered to him. So I have a bunch more of these things. The Rasa Leela, demigods showered flowers. When Krishna killed different demons, Denuka, Bakasura. I'll just mention a few more. When he killed Davida, when he won Sri Lakshmana by piercing the fish tart, she's one of the eight main queens of Krishna. Each one told their story at Kurukshetra. And then I had a bunch of things about the Apsaras and the Gandharvas, where they appear in all different kinds of places. So that's, I'll skip all that. Quarter till. Anyone like to add or subtract anything? Manamati Prabhu.
Just yesterday, Akuti was mentioning, I already forget the details, but basically they had collected roses from all around. I forget where, probably one of you would know, but like 10 bags of roses and for Radha Damodar. So Vishnujan Swami was chanting Vrindavana Ramyasthan. He was chanting on his particular music, instrument, and the devotees were just showering flowers to Radha Damodar. And I was thinking, wow, that's really the spiritual world happening there, about showering flowers. And probably the demigods were also there that we couldn't see, that we couldn't see. Anyway, that's the thought came to my mind. I was appreciating what you said in the class about, you mentioned about the devotee who left and the reason why he left. And I was appreciating your comment that if we start thinking about one thing, you know, like Indra, you know, how could he do the thunderbolt, you know, what happened? But if we start thinking one, then eventually what happens, you just go the wrong direction there. So really appreciating that. And I was thinking that you also mentioned about Prabhupada, he would take things, I guess you mentioned
literally,
and he did. And I was thinking, that's such a safe place to be. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we doubt one thing, we question one thing, then our mind will again question something else. So it's such a safe way that Prabhupada would just take things literally like that, and otherwise we start questioning things, and it's...
Yeah. Prabhupada would say, it, just because it's beyond your experience, that doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. I've been listening to this narrative about the Mahabharata, you know, and there's so many different things in there that are beyond our conceptions, like... These Brahmastra weapons, you know, these weapons that create water and fire and so many things. And then I was thinking also about how when I look at those stories, you know, when I look at those pastimes, I see how Krishna is just like pulling strings in so many different ways. And like in that whole pastime of Arjuna saying, well, I'm going to go into a fire if I don't kill this person. And Krishna, like, puts up his Sudarshan chakra and covers the sun so that everybody thinks that, oh, yeah, the sun is set, Arjuna's going to die. You know, so many things like that. Or it's just this, the whole story about Karna and his armor that he had, and how Krishna arranges for that to be taken from him so that he could be killed by Arjuna. It's very vast. I mean, it really expands our ability to see what's going on.
So, actually, Prabhupada would make the argument in relation to Krishna's Leela. People take it as mythology. Prabhupada said, this is written by Vyasadeva. You know, if Vyasadeva accepts it, then who are you to say, you know, it's not true? If he accepts this, then he, you know, he's teaching such high philosophy, the greatest philosophy, and that you think he's going to deal with these childish stories? No, these are facts because of the person who's presenting them.
It was in Perth, Australia. Shutakirti remembers that it was apparently around the time Prabhupada was translating the fifth canto. And I'm going to just get the gist of it here. It was evident to us that Srila Prabhupada did not want us to become sidetracked from that goal he worked nonstop to teach us. Prabhupada continued, if this were to be scientific, it would take volumes to explore how the creation is done. But this was not Sukadeva Goswami's purpose in speaking to explain very scientifically the creation. He just wants us to understand Krishna has created everything. Develop love of Krishna. That is all. If you can't understand it, you accept it because it is there in the scriptures. We do not bother our minds trying to understand how it could be like this or be like that. We just want to develop love of God.
Yeah. Megavati Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So many points I thought of while you were speaking. But on this point, the fifth canto, I've heard that Srila Prabhupada asked his scientist devotees to explain it because he wasn't so scientifically minded. I don't have a reference for that. But I'm also remembering Sariputta Prabhu and the way he would present, well, it might be like this, mm-hmm. or it might be like that. And recently, or not that long ago, Murali Gopal Prabhu presented Sariputta's in some
nuance.
In such a way that a lay person could understand, okay, so the earth is circling around this way, and the living entities are going that way, but it's the elliptic is different in the universe, and you realize that it's like there's so many dimensions. That was another thing Sariputta Prabhu mentioned, that there are dimensions beyond our understanding. And so then you just have to accept that somehow or another, it's as it, but to take it too literally, oh, a yojana is 8 miles, and therefore, you know, the descriptions don't match. It can be problematic in such situations.
Yeah. Panchagora Prabhu.
We've seen how Mahadev is the greatest devotee, but in order to protect Bana, his servant, he fought with Krishna and Balaram, and you know, he brought Kartikeya, and then when Indra, great demigod, he fights with Krishna. So how is it that the demigods and great exalted personalities take the position like of demons or something like that to fight with Krishna?
It seems like many things are accomplished at the same time, and there are many lessons also. We learn, you know, many lessons. Ultimately, it's Krishna's will these things take place. Indra is really a bewildering personality, the different things that he does. Not only him, actually. Other highly posted demigods. We hear about Soma Devi kidnapping someone, Brihaspati's wife, and, you know... There's this idea in mythology, Greek and Roman mythology, where the gods there are always doing despicable kinds of things, you know. So we have a little bit of that too. Why? Well, for one thing, you know, we get different lessons from it. Now, when Krishna's involved, the easiest thing is to say, well, Krishna arranged it. He wanted this situation. If you read that pastime, of course, Krishna fighting with Banasura. Then there's philosophy being spoken there in that context. Anyway, we learn different things. There are different spiritual lessons that are brought out. So a lot Krishna creates, or his Leela Shakti creates situations that bring out different philosophical points, or ultimately attract us to Krishna, because you know the Christians, they have this idea. You know, why is there evil in the world? One of the things they say, one of their answers is, we say that they don't have an answer. Well, they have answers, but we may not agree with them. But one of their answers is, because so goodness can come out. If there are no poor people, how can you be charitable? So somebody has to be poor. So God has to have and create poor people, basically, or, you know, different things like that. So in order for goodness, and they think that goodness has its own kind of, not will exactly, but, it, you know, because God is good, there's a sort of an imperative for goodness to manifest itself. So, but manifest, at least in the material world, in the context of evil. You have to have evil or else to spotlight the good. So that kind of thing also comes out in Krishna's Leela. We see how wonderful Krishna is because of how we see how wonderful Nrsingadev is because of Hiranyakashipu. Now, in some ways, I also find, I'm always trying to, you know, intellectualize everything. So I wonder what happened in order to create demons, what do these demons do? They terrorize the universe. And then, of course, Krishna comes in response. So he's saying, well, everybody in the whole universe has to suffer because Krishna wants to play. I don't exactly have an answer to that. But all I can say is, well, I guess you could say they're all involved in Krishna's leela, so everyone is getting the benefit somehow. That's one way. You can always give some kind of explanation. But Sita Dee Prabhu.
Here's some kind of explanation.
Dr. D.
Well, like you... What about it? It's right here. He's confusing me, man. I forgot what I'm going to say now. Oh, so I can understand her better.
It seems like the volume is really loud. Anyway, I'm moving back here.
Oh, you know, like these leelas with Krishna you just brought up. I mean, at one hand, it's his desire these things happen, but part of his desire is to fulfill the desires of the jivas. They all have autonomy. So he's doing unlimited things effortlessly, automatically. I mean, Banasura, I can't vouch for his character, but on one hand, he was getting his yayas out, you know? But Krishna's also engaging that and bringing out all these lessons in the process. So, you know, the autonomy of the jivas are always there as well. There's that. The problem of evil, you know, Krishna's just given these people their opportunity to express themselves, and karma's so intricate, and it's all a lesson. And I'm just rolling here, but on one hand, karma is just, you know, a facility to imagine that Krishna's not involved. You know, that things that happen automatically, maybe I can control it. But Krishna's totally on top of all this stuff. And he's fulfilling this, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, a few thoughts.
What? Anybody else? Somadas?
I just want to come back to the showering of flowers. You know, in some temples, they call it a pushabhishek. Where they actually...
Yeah, pushpa-abhishek, yeah.
Pushpa-abhishek, yeah. Is that mentioned at all, or those words, pushpa-abhishek, in these descriptions?
I don't remember ever coming across that particular term describing these events. Yeah, I don't know. Of course, we know abhishek means to bathe, and pushpa with flowers, so maybe it's in there somewhere. I don't know. I can't remember. It's a nice idea, though. Bathing in flowers, rose water.
Hare Krishna. Back to the original point about how can we believe all these things. Mm-hmm. I remember in either the Leelamrita or one of Satrup Maharaj's books, he describes how when he was still Steve, and he went to see the Swami, and he was sitting in front of him, and Srila Prabhupada was describing something, and he mentioned these four-armed people. Mm-hmm. So Steve is sitting there thinking, there are no people with four arms anywhere. But then he realized that he's sitting in front of this person who looks like a Buddha. His earlobes are so long, he seems to be glowing, and he's thinking, I'm sitting in front of this person that's inconceivable to me. Why should I reject what he's saying? So it really comes down to who you believe.
Yeah. Prabhupada, there's, you know, you can see on YouTube, there's like a whole series, all the films of Prabhupada, they're all up there. I went through all of them last year. And there's one, I think it's in Australia, and one young lady and girl in the audience asked Prabhupada something about how can we believe something like this, one of these impossible kind of things. Prabhupada said, what is your experience? And sometimes he would say, you don't know more than the inside of your mother's womb. That's the extent of your experience. You know the inside of your mother's womb. So our experience is so small just because we don't have experience. You know, who are you? Who are you to say it doesn't exist? There are so many things beyond our experience. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.